It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Madison Allworth.
I'm Juan Williams.
I'm Liz Claman, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, April 12th, 2024. I'm Chris Foster. O.J. Simpson's dead. Not quite 30 years since the murders he was found not guilty of committing.
His life spiraled out of control. O.J. Simpson forced his own undoing.
The Arizona Supreme Court upholding a near-total abortion ban from 1864 gives Democrats more fuel to drive voter turnout in November.
Republicans are having to step up and say, yeah, some of this stuff is too extreme for us. That's what President Trump has said. We always fought to overturn Roe v. Wade. I gave you that. But that means that this is now a state battle and you're going to have to go state by state and let each figure it out.
We're speaking with Fox News Sunday host Shannon Bream.
And I'm Joe Concha. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
Orenthal James Simpson, O.J., was part of American culture long before he was an accused killer. He grew up in housing projects in San Francisco, was in a street gang as a teenager, and then became a big football star. He won the Heisman Trophy as the best player in college football for the University of Southern California in 1968. He became known as the Juice during his 11 years in the NFL, mostly with the Buffalo Bills, the first player to rush for 2,000 yards in 1973. After that came a career in broadcasting and acting in TV series and movies like Roots and the Naked Gun comedies, and in commercials.
Hertz prices are lower than you think. And now with their new low daily economy fares, their prices are competitive with anybody's.
On June 12, 1994, Simpson's ex-wife Nicole Brown and her friend Ron Goldman were stabbed to death at her home in Los Angeles. He was charged 5 days later and arrested after a slow-speed police chase in a white Bronco watched by tens of millions of people on TV. Millions more watched the trial and the verdict in 1995.
We, the jury, in the above-entitled action, find the defendant Orenthal James Simpson not guilty of the crime of murder.
After the trial in 1997, Simpson was found liable for the deaths in a civil case and was ordered to pay more than $33 million to Ron and Nicole's families. He did end up convicted of robbery and kidnapping, serving 9 years in prison in Nevada. After 6.5 more years of freedom, O.J. Simpson died of cancer, his family announced, 76 years old.
I'm sort of reminded not of O.J. Simpson, but of the two people that I always believed, without question, that he murdered, Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman.
Fox News legal analyst Greg Jarrett covered the trial back then.
And my thoughts and prayers go out, as they always have, to their survivors. You know, this was a terrible tragedy in so many ways. O.J. Simpson was this iconic football player. You know, has set all kinds of records. Heisman Trophy winner. First pick in the NFL draft, set, you know, the rushing record, 2,000 yards in the NFL. And he went on to become, you know, a pitchman for Hertz and, you know, other products, an actor in movies. And, you know, he had this wonderful life from a hardscrabble upbringing to immense popular success and financial success as well. But, you know, his life spiraled out of control. O.J. Simpson, you know, forced his own undoing.
Looking back on it, to me, retroactively, now it seems almost distasteful, the publicity around that trial. And it turned into a soap opera. People, there were jokes about it. And I wonder if it would be covered exactly the same way now.
I don't know. Maybe it would. I covered it for 9 months live in Los Angeles at the courthouse for Court TV. Every day of the trial. And this really, for a great many Americans, was their first exposure to, you know, the workings of an actual murder trial, warts and all. The failures of the prosecution, the success of the defense, the poor decisions made, I thought, by Judge Lance Ito, who presided over the case. And, you know, unless Americans actually watched the trial, and tens of millions did each and every day, you know, I think they would have maybe come to different conclusions. You know, when you hear it secondhand by reading about it in the newspaper or hearing reports about it, it's not the same thing of actually watching witnesses testifying and judging their credibility, looking at the physical evidence that was presented inside the courtroom. To truly understand a trial and make a decision on your own, you have to actually watch it. So I've always been a proponent of cameras in the courtroom.
Speaking of warts and all, that an 11-month trial, do you think that it's fair, the criticism of the prosecution, that they overcomplicated this case beyond just the simple mistakes like having him try on a glove that apparently didn't fit, or he pretended it didn't fit?
Yeah, I mean, so many mistakes were made by the prosecution. And I fault Chris Darden and Marcia Clark, the two principal prosecutors. They thought that this case could be easily proven, but they failed in many ways in their proof. I think they only have themselves to blame. But there were other factors here. Judge Lancito completely lost control of the case. This is a case that should have taken no more than 6 weeks to try. And it actually took 9 months. You said 11. That includes some of the pretrial hearings. But in earnest, from opening statements to verdict, it took 9 months. That was absurd. And again, Lancito lost control. He allowed the defense to introduce utterly irrelevant, wild theories. And you have to remember that I grew up in Los Angeles. I know it quite well. At the time that of the criminal trial in 1995, Los Angeles was this cauldron of racial unrest, distrust of police officers. And when the elected DA, Gil Garcetti, sent the case away from where the crime occurred in Santa Monica to downtown Los Angeles, I shook my head and said, that is a huge mistake. I'd tried cases in downtown Los Angeles. Jurors there hate cops, and this was a cop case. They distrusted science and DNA, which was new at the time. And I think if this criminal case had been tried in Santa Monica, the verdict would have been completely different.
Obviously, the racial divide, still to this day, not quite as deeply if you look at polls, but still it's there. There were celebrations among some African Americans when he got off, and it was just jaw-dropping disbelief among probably most white Americans. Just the shock on one hand and the celebration on the other was just so stark.
Yeah, and the polling data showed that. The vast majority of African Americans polled after the verdict agreed with it. The vast majority of white people did not. And you know, that has changed over the years. A majority of African Americans polled not long ago now agree that O.J. Simpson got away with two murders. You know, the wisdom of time has changed their opinions and their attitudes. But, you know, this was a case in which I think in the end justice was not done. I've covered hundreds of trials in my 40-year career as a journalist, and I've never seen such overwhelming evidence of guilt. And yet the jury would not accept it. It was a classic case of jury nullification. I mean, the blood of O.J. Simpson was dripping away from the bodies to the back of the home where his Ford Bronco was parked. The blood of the victims were on the outside of his Ford Bronco and smeared and splattered on the inside of his vehicle. Their blood was found on his socks in his bedroom at his home. Their blood was found on a glove at the back of his property, and the matching glove had been dropped at the scene of the crime. I mean, this is incontrovertible, irrefutable evidence. And yet, you know, Barry Scheck, and he's a fine lawyer, I thought he was using smoke and mirrors to try to deceive the jury.
And, you know, Greg, for all we were told, all that blood was planted. by people that were just out to get a successful black man.
Yeah, I mean, that was the other crazy part of it. It was utterly ludicrous that the defense argued that the glove at the back of Simpson's property was planted by police, that the blood inside the vehicle, the Ford Bronco, was planted by police, that the blood on the gate at Simpson's home was planted by police, that the blood on the socks was planted by police. Completely absurd. No right-minded person would ever believe it. And yet Johnny Cochran was so persuasive. And one of the pivotal moments in the trial came when Chris Darden, goaded by the famed defense attorney F. Lee Bailey, was a part of the dream team. Bailey taunted Darden into having Simpson try on the glove. And I mean, it was one of the dumbest decisions I've ever seen a lawyer make. And sure enough, you know, the gloves are handed to O.J. Simpson, and he, you know, he struggles to try to put them on and sort of pretends that they don't fit. And in some ways, they didn't fit. Why? Because they'd been soaked in blood, and then they'd been frozen and unfrozen. So they'd shrunk.
Right.
So, you know, that, of course, led to the famous line in closing arguments by Johnny Cochran. It was a brilliant line from a defense standpoint. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit. And the jurors grabbed onto that, and that was their excuse.
There are plenty of people now who are young enough to not remember just that year of OJ, and then before that, just how famous he was. He was one of the most recognized people in the world and admired and beloved.
He was such a famous guy. And his story, his life story, was really quite remarkable. Before the trial began, I traveled to San Francisco, where I'd lived for a decade, and I went to his neighborhood. He grew up with his best friend, Al Cowlings, in the projects, an area of San Francisco that, you know, very run down, very crime ridden. It was a tough life. And to survive, I mean, you had to fight your way through it. And yet he had this wonderful personality that was so engaging. And it translated into television. You know, he joined Monday Night Football after his career. And as you and I talked about, he was a pitchman for Hertz and other products because he was so immensely popular, and he transcended issues of race. He famously said, "I'm not black, I'm OJ." And you know, there was an element of truth to that. You know, everybody liked him, everybody loved him, and yet he had these demons.
OJ Simpson, dead at the age of 76, give or take. He lived about 41 years longer than his ex-wife, about 51 years longer than Ron Goldman. Thanks, Greg.
My pleasure.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Starting April 15th, the Fox News Podcast Network launches a new fast-paced daily quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Play, share, and of course, listen to The Quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is Joe Concha with your Fox News commentary. Coming up.
Shame on you! Shame on you!
Democrats in Arizona's legislature say Republicans should be ashamed after blocking a vote to repeal a near-total abortion ban and then adjourn. State Supreme Court Tuesday upheld that ban, passed in 1864 before Arizona was a state.
We do not want to repeal the pre-Roe law without first having a conversation about it.
Republican Teresa Martinez, there's an agreement to not enforce the ban for 45 days. Former President Trump says he would not sign a federal abortion ban, and about the Arizona ruling.
It's all about states' rights, and it'll be straightened out. And I'm sure that the governor and everybody else are going to bring it back into reason, and that will be taken care of, I think, very quickly.
Vice President Kamala Harris is turning a planned trip to Arizona into an official campaign event to talk about abortion rights. President Biden's campaign is already running ads about it in the state, and the Democratic National Committee is putting up billboards.
You heard from the president as well saying, you know, Arizona wants to take us back to the, you know, 20th century, takes us back to a different time, takes us, you know, 19th century. I mean, all over the place. They were saying before Arizona was even a state.
Fox News Sunday and Living the Bream podcast host Shannon Bream.
You know, they do have a good control of the conversation about this, and it's worked really well for them at the ballot box. And that's a real problem that Republicans face going into the fall.
Yeah, because many of them spent years saying, To our pro-life supporters, we're going to take abortion away. And now that or at least rights have been severely restricted in a lot of places, they're like, okay, maybe we went a little too far. I mean, like Carrie Lake running for governor 2 years ago in Arizona expressed support for that ban. Now she says, nah, don't worry, we'll get it changed. We're going to protect abortion access.
Well, an interesting thing, too, is in Arizona, you do have Democrats and Republicans stepping up and saying, we're going to work together to try to get something through the legislature, because we agree this isn't a great result, what we got from the Arizona Supreme Court. So Republicans are having to step up and say, yeah, some of this stuff is too extreme for us. That's what President Trump has said. We always fought to overturn Roe v. Wade. I gave you that. But that means that this is now a state battle and you're going to have to go state by state and let each figure it out. But I have heard from, you know, pastors, pro-life leaders, a number of these organizations just flooding my text and email, you know, saying we are so disappointed in this guy. We embraced him. We didn't know where he was going to be on abortion. We were opposed to him at first. Then he became what they termed, quote, the most pro-life president in history. They feel very betrayed and abandoned by him. Now, are those folks going to go en masse and vote for Biden? No, but they might stay home. Because they're angry right now. They've got a few months to work through those feelings and figure it out. But Trump has said, you know, I gave you what you wanted to go back and fight at the state level. What a lot of those folks are now saying is, listen, you look to Europe where, you know, the 12 or 15 week ban in most countries is the deal. And they argue that the, you know, United States should think about doing something similar. So for the president to say, I won't sign it if it gets to my desk, meaning the former president, those groups are very disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those issues where you can't please all the people all the time.
Never.
And his attorney, speaking to Donald Trump, they keep offering up reasons to delay his first criminal trial. They keep getting rejected. So unlike a lot of the other cases that keep getting kicked down the road, it looks like this one is going to kick off on Monday.
Yeah, absent some last-minute legal maneuvering and surprise, jury selection starts on Monday. And remember, of course, this was the first indictment of President Trump a little over a year ago when Alvin Bragg said, yeah, we're going to move forward with this case. And now we're getting into these cases that aren't only civil in nature. You know, we're talking about criminal cases that have actual jail time and stiffer penalties and all kinds of different things at the state and federal level. So this is crunch time for the Trump legal team and for the former president. Listen, it keeps him in the news. He doesn't have a problem staying in the news, and he will continue to come out each day, despite the gag order, to say whatever he possibly can up to that limit. And some would argue he's already crossed over it. But he will continue to say, this is proof they're trying to silence me, so you can't vote for me. That's why you got to vote for me. And it's been very successful so far.
When he was first indicted in this case, people call it a hush money trial just for sort of shorthand, but it's really more about, it's not about the hush money. That's not illegal. It's about business records. And sort of tangentially
campaign
about
finance,
right?
Yeah.
It sort of tangentially about campaign finance, that he was, that what he was doing was essentially illegally donating to his own campaign. I don't know. It's complicated, but basically he was trying to keep this from the American people for political reasons. Now it's funny that this was the case that at the time people were like, oh, this is the one. The seal is now broken. Now you can indict him, and this is the one that probably is really the least dangerous to him criminally, is the one that we're going to get first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing that's really tricky for him is that no matter what you think about the case, and you know people across the political spectrum, including people who do not like President Trump, think this is a very weak stretch of a case. But juries, you can't predict. And we know that so far, juries for former President Trump in New York have not been good. For him. Judges have not been good for him there. So it'll be interesting to see how this comes together, whether you know, the novel sort of way that they're trying to shoehorn this law and use it against him, if it will have the intended effect. But I do think of most of the cases, it, you know, just on the face of it legally, it is one of the weakest, but it's got real teeth to it, and a jury can do unpredictable things.
How do you possibly voir dire a jury pool with a defendant like this? I mean,
right.
I know there are lots of high profile cases over history where you've had to try to weed people out and get an impartial jury. But man, this is who doesn't have an opinion about him?
Right. I mean, unless you've suddenly awoken from a coma for 30 years, you know everything about President Trump. I mean, he's been the president. Whether you can be fair or not, this voir dire is going to be very tricky for the two sides to pick the jurors to sit on this case. And you already see the media talking about who the defense is going to want, who the prosecution is going to want. It's more about who you don't want. Who you want to keep from getting seated on this jury. And there are always questions, you know, if you've served in jury duty, about, have you been in law enforcement? Have you somebody in your family in law enforcement? And of course, these folks think President Trump has a connection with a lot of people in the law enforcement community. They're going to ask about levels of education. You know, they're always going to be looking to see everything they can find out politically about these jurors, if they've, you know, taking really strong political stances or donated or worked on behalf of campaigns. Social media is out there. So, man, this is going to be a very tricky exercise in finding people who, obviously, everybody knows who President Trump is. But do you have a neutral take on him? Most people do not.
Is there anything to the idea that the judge should be off the case because of his daughter's consulting work with Democrats? I mean, I guess any bias on the judge's part would really have to be actually demonstrated in court for it to be mm-hmm. grounds for appeal. And maybe the same with jurors. If somebody just says something positive or negative about Donald Trump on Twitter or Facebook 6 years ago, mm-hmm. can that be grounds to say, look, they're not unbiased?
Yeah, I mean, I think that his legal team is going to comb through every possible detail they can find on that. But the fact is, you know, family members have different opinions and family members are involved in different things. Think about all the people who have come after Justice Thomas. They want him recused off of all kinds of cases because of the work that Ginni Thomas has done. So people do this from, you know, the left and the right. They want to go in there and say that people can't be unbiased when it comes to their clients. So they're going to dig and dig and dig and try to find everything that they can on these folks. What I've always been surprised about the last couple of years, and not it directly in connection with President Trump, but in other cases, that people will be seated on a jury, a decision will come out. Afterwards, people start digging around and find things that seem like they would be easily discoverable on people's social media and other places that they didn't find before they seated them on the jury trial. I don't think that's going to be the case here. I think there's going to be a very deep vetting as quickly as they can on everybody who shows up. Yeah. For potential jury duty.
Another thing hanging out there is Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas's impeachment trial in the Senate. Once it's sent over to the Senate, they have to take it up. Are they just trying to minimize disruption with the timing of it?
Well, you know, you've got the majority leader over there, Democrat Chuck Schumer, saying essentially this thing is going nowhere. You've got Republicans saying, okay, if there's nothing to it, then let us hear the evidence and see it. You know, don't dismiss it outright. Procedurally, so we never get to it. Obviously, it's good for them politically to talk about it too. It's also really difficult for Democrats who think are in tough Senate races, like Tester and others, to have to go out there and defend Alejandro Mayorkas when you've got the border in the shape that it's in. So I'm sure that Senate Democrats would like it to just go away very quickly. It looks like procedurally, that's what Schumer expects to do. And it probably should land there, we think, Monday or Tuesday.
Finally, let me throw one more at you. Some Democrats in Congress this week have felt the need to come out and push back against the idea that Sonia Sotomayor should resign from the Supreme Court as a justice and let President Biden appoint somebody younger in case mm-hmm. Trump wins and we get another Ruth Bader Ginsburg thing where,
right.
where she dies and somebody from the other party gets to appoint a successor. Now, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was 87 years old, and Sonia Sotomayor is 69. She's got diabetes, but there's no public mm-hmm. indication that she's not doing anything but fine or thinking about leaving. Mm-hmm. Where do the rumblings come from?
Well, you know, this always starts, I think, in academia and the far left and people who, you know, write op-eds and they're very worried about it. You got to remember, too, although I've seen her recently and she seems to be as, you know, good a shape she's always been. She's definitely physically and mentally on the bench, fully engaged, seems like her usual self to me. But she has been out there talking about, I'm tired, it's frustrating. There are cases that, you know, in my stomach and my heart, it's so hard to sit through these and lose these. And it's not the job in some sense that I thought it was going to be. And because of the emergency docket, there is really no break. They used to have the summer to teach and to read and to, you know, do these travel assignments and that kind of thing. And it's really not that anymore because the court really is 365 with all of these emergency docket, you know, happenings. So she's definitely been out there complaining a little bit, I think it's fair to say, about the job. So that gives people on the left who would like to see her seat not be in jeopardy a little bit of ammo to go out there and say, okay, we're going to write, we're going to push, we're going to talk about this. Because she herself has said, you know, the job is overwhelming. I can imagine. But zero indication she wants to go anywhere or that she has any physical problems beyond just managing her diabetes.
Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday, host of the Living the Bream podcast. Shannon, thank you.
Chris, thank you.
And now, some good news with Tanya J. Powers.
Volunteers in Florida are honoring seniors this month just ahead of Passover. WSVN reports that hundreds of people attended a volunteer event and teamed up with the Jewish Community Services of South Florida, putting together Passover kits for Holocaust survivors and homebound seniors in the area. They assembled bags filled with items that would be needed for a proper Passover celebration and included kosher meals as well as personal hygiene items. Jewish Community Services plans to deliver the kits to 450 seniors. Passover is set for April 22nd. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Joe Concha.
What's on your mind?
Let's put in perspective just how big O.J. Simpson was in this country before the murders of Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson, and particularly after that happened. The slow speed chase, we all remember that with the white Bronco and the helicopters hovering overhead. June 17, 1994, that drew 95 million viewers. The verdict of the trial 1 year later, 1995, drew more than 100 million viewers. We're talking Super Bowl-like numbers. Remember, no Fox News or MSNBC at the time. Soap operas were preempted for months due to the televised trial. And those proceedings made all involved the biggest stars in the world, not just O.J., but Marsha Clark, Chris Darden, Johnny Cochran, Robert Kardashian, that name sound familiar? F. Lee Bailey, Judge Ito. These were household names that, if you were an adult at the time, you could still reel them off today like you're talking about the 1998 Yankees. Because I'm not sure anyone born at that time realizes this, by the way. But back in 1975, after O.J. retired from football, and before the term sports marketing was ever a thing, Hertz Rental Car signed O.J. to be its spokesperson, the first kind of contract for a major athlete of any kind. And the image of Simpson hurtling through airports is one of the most famous ads of the 20th century. It worked. O.J. was to Hertz what Michael Jordan would be for Nike. O.J. would go on to do movies like the Naked Gun series. Monday Night Football, ABC signed him to work with Howard Cosell. He was an A-plus lister at celebrity parties, and the man always seemed to be happy. That's what made the murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman so shocking. Given his public persona at the time, it would be like, let's put it this way, Peyton Manning or Derek Jeter killing two people today. That kind of reputation, that kind of iconic image. It was almost impossible to believe that O.J. could have actually done this until the facts overwhelmingly showed that he did do it. Either way, Nicole Brown Simpson, Ron Goldman, died that day in June of 1994. They didn't have to, and O.J. absolutely should have been convicted, and he should have died in prison. That's the obituary. I'm Joe Concha.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.